G'day, mate, how you going? On tonight's episode, we're going to look at one of the greatest Ozploitation classics. This is a film which came out in the wake of Mad Max and of all the great Australian films coming out of the late 1970s. This is a film about Zed Special, that's right, a special forces unit from Australia that went behind enemy lines in World War II. The one, the only, Attack Force Zed. Good to hear. I'm going to put the boats in the water and we're going to make sure we got ourselves ready. Yep. Got myself my haversack, got myself my webbing, beret, and got my Sten gun. Let's go, boys. We've just got to get to the beach. I got a mission to do. I ain't worrying about no submarines.
All right, lights, camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Oh, g'day, mate. There you go. G'day, mate, and welcome to the one and only Lethal Mullet Podcast, brought to you live by, of course, Lethal Mullet Network, where you find this show and many others. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and tonight we're going to be looking at Attack Force Zed. This is a great movie, which is part of pretty much the Ozploitation line of films, a whole heap of films which, really saturated the market, particularly here in Australia, at the advent of VHS in particular, and, of course, the late 70s. With some rip-roaring horror films, you got some great films like Mad Max were in amongst those, of course. And, of course, we got this one, Attack Force Zed, starring Mel Gibson, Sam Neill, John Waters. We've also got some international talent in it as well. We've even got, of course, John Philip Law from Barbarella, Danger Diabolic. We also have Chris Haywood from Razorback. Yeah, there's an old classic for you as well. John Waters, of course, is also from Breaker Morant, which was a huge film out here, a courtroom drama film, of course, about said character, Breaker Morant. Now, this is a film which really does, in some ways, head towards that sort of World War II film that was made in the 1960s, films like The Guns of Navarone and many others, which are pretty much along the line of classic World War II Men on a Mission film. And let's not beat around the bush. The real star of this film is, of course, the one and the only Sam Neill. And he certainly plays a very dark character in this in terms of the efficiency of the character. One that is a true soldier through and through, does not let anyone get in the way of the mission, which we're going to talk about as we get into the movie. Now, the film itself's always been on TV over the years. I saw it on TV as a kid. Around about probably 1983, 1984. It certainly wasn't a huge hit out here in Australia. I don't know whether it was shown overseas. It was something we'll look at soon, I guess. But it certainly was a massive VHS hit. So you always saw it on the shelves at Civic Video, Amiga Video, Blockbuster Video, Video Easy, all these outlets which are sadly not around anymore, folks. And it's a real travesty. There's a couple of holdouts here on the Gold Coast which are still doing us proud with some great video rentals still to this day. In the advent of streaming, it's obviously probably one of the harder businesses to keep going, but my hat's off to anyone that still keeps these wonderful forms of places where you can get entertainment and hard copy, which I think sadly is on the way up, folks, unfortunately. Now, with World War II being the main theme of this, obviously, Australian involvement in it is the one that this film, which originally scripted by Philip Noyce, which, of course, you know Philip Noyce from his work on many American films, of course, Blind Fury, which we've covered here with Rutger Hauer and a great sword fight with Shoichi Kasugi, the great ninja from the 1980s. And, of course, let's not forget, too, the great work he did on Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, where he really partnered up well with a middle-aged action hero, Jack Ryan. That's right, Jack Ryan, as played by the one and only Harrison Ford, folks. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're probably the best of the two. I do best of the four or five now they've done. They've done a few now. I certainly like all the films, and I do like the new show, which actually I've been asked by a few listeners to cover. So we may look at the Amazon Prime show, which is, of course, Jack Ryan. And it's quite a good little series, actually. I've got to say that it does follow the tradition quite well. But the Mace Neufeld produced films are still just top of the line, of course, with The Adventures of Ramius, of course. Sean Connery. My submarine. Get off. You're not coming anywhere near my submarine. Thank you very much. And, of course, Hunt for October, which actually had Sam Neill, folks. Funny how that comes full circle there, isn't it? There's always some way that Tom Clancy gets involved in conversation, I've got to say. But this film, Task Force Z, is one that, Australians are quite, I would say, you either grew up in that time where you knew it, you had a quite good familiar feel of it being on TV late at night. It's usually, it was one of those ones that used to play at like 11 o'clock at night. People like, what do we fill our TV numbers up with? Oh, let's get Mel Gibson and bloody Sam Neill on there. Oh, look, it's got the guy from Play School, John Waters. Yeah, it'll be right. Let's get him on there. Of course, what do they do? They do exactly that. They used to put it on late at night, along with The Man from Hong Kong and Razorback, all these classic 1980s and 1970s exploitation films. And yes, I have mentioned we will cover The Man from Hong Kong very soon. This is a great film with a lot of stars of Mad Max in it. That's right, a lot of stars of Mad Max. And of course, Sammo Hung is one of the many stuntmen on the film. And actually, it's a massive, huge fight at the start. It's a great fight which really shows his skills. And certainly at a time when it was only a few years after he'd had that fight with Bruce Lee in End of the Dragon. A lot of people forget that. That's Sammo Hung at the start of End of the Dragon. The only takeaway I'm going to say from that is I loved Bruce's gloves in that. They've got those, and you can actually buy those here in Australia. They're martial arts gloves, which are more like boxing gloves, but all of your digits are fully covered so that you can actually grapple with them. Now, this is not used by MMA fighters, folks. This is something that was used in the 80s and 90s for mixed martial arts. Definitely exclusively by Jeet Kune Do stylists. So again, there's some interests even in my own dojo with some of my students in Jeet Kune Do. And all I will say is get those gloves, folks. If you're going to do kumite, free sparring, I'll tell you what, you can't do better than those gloves. They're far better than the ones you see in kickboxing and in point fighting karate, so point scoring style kumite. Those sort of point mark tournaments and stuff like that, doesn't really matter too much using the different sort of gloves that you wear now these days. But if you're going full contact, you need more protection. You certainly need to be able to grab and do arm locks and, of course, arm bars, all that sort of stuff. To do that, you need your digits free, folks, and this is the best way to do them. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, time for the news here, folks. And the news is what we're going to be telling you about today is to do with simply Zed Special. We're going to let you know all about this historical Australian Armed Forces unit. Well, it wasn't just Australian, folks. I've got to say, there was more than Australian forces involved in Zed Special. So it was a joint Allied Special Forces unit in the latter parts of the Second World War. And they're basically operating in behind enemy lines against the Japanese forces, the Japanese Imperial Army. And this was in and around Southeast Asia. So mainly Australian forces, but it also had British, Dutch, and New Zealand, and Timorese, and Indonesian members as well, in the different parts in and around the Dutch East Indies. So this was kind of a precursor to the commando units that we've got now here in Australia in particular, ones like the Special Air Service, which is based out in Western Australia. There's also, obviously, an army division, which is a commando unit here in Australia. But they're pretty much, you know, the predecessors of those. So Zed Special was highly regarded, definitely one of the great special forces in that area. And, you know, they had such a calling to the art, a calling to what had to be done, and certainly was crucial in any success of basically repelling invaders to the area, in particular the spread of the Imperial Japanese forces at the time. They were active from around about 1942 to 1946, and of course on the Allied side. They specialised in everything, a bit of airborne warfare, direct action, guerrilla warfare, long-range penetration, military intelligence, raiding, sabotage, special ops, and of course reconnaissance was huge in some of their tasks. There's been many documentaries on Australian television about Zed Special. You can look them up on YouTube, and you'll see there's even some of the ancestors of these brave men and women that were involved in the forces. And they've basically done even some training where you get the great-grandson or the granddaughter or whatever it is, the son even, involved in doing the Zed Special training from World War II now, which is really, really interesting. You can see that in some of those documentaries. But again, very, very sort of sought-after unit at the time. Some of the different engagements they had, Operation Scorpion, Operation Jaywick, Operation Ramau, Benetang, and they're also in the Borneo campaigns of Operation Semut, Operation Agus, Python, Copper, Opossum, and Platypus. There you go, it's an Australian term for you folks, platypus. Now, the actual Zed Special themselves was disbanded after the war, but it certainly was crucial, as I say again, crucial for the Australian commando units we have now, which are, you know, again, they're from that long tradition, that legacy that was at the time of World War II. From there, we also had, obviously, you know, the spread, and even in the UK, the British forces had the start of the Desert Forces of things like the Special Air Service and, of course, the Special Boat Service, the SBS. Those all sort of came out of that timing as well. It was Australian, sort of franchised that, I guess, as well, where we had our own SAS and also the New Zealanders did as well. What we're about to explain in the film is a simple campaign, the sort of seek and destroy campaign, in this case a rescue mission, where they're called in to pull out somebody who's been obviously a crash-landed plane in the middle of the jungle. They've got to go and pull the vital cargo, which turns out to be a traitor to the Japanese and one that could help the Allied forces in going to some sort of success at the end of World War II. So again, very integral to the sort of training, integral to the sort of missions that would be asked of the Zed Special and of course the Allies at that time. The movie itself is going to show obviously characters from all walks of life, from British, Dutch in this case as well, with the American actor we've got in this playing that. And it really sort of spreads out the kind of conflicts and, of course, the danger involved, which each of those commandos had to go through. But also using the fact that once they're in there, they also got to know the local forces, the militia, local rebels in this case, and the local Chinese rebels also helped them fight the Japanese in this one too, which is, again, something that they always do, win the hearts and minds, is something that a lot of these special forces have always done. Go into villages and teach the locals how to repel all borders. I think that's what's going to be really interesting in this one, is that you get to see a little bit of that too. So here's some of the history. The Inter-Allied Services Department, the IASD, was established to bring about some type of unit in 1942. And this was brought about through General Thomas Blamey, and who designed the idea of this force on the SOE, the British Special Operations Executive. And from there, it was renamed the Special Operations Australia. And from there, of course, we have the foundation of some of these units. Of course, one of those being, of course, the Commando Raiding Unit, organised under the designation of Z Special Unit. There were many schools established all over across Australia, and of course, the main one was in Refuge Bay. And of course, this was an idea to call it Camp Z, where everyone would train and basically go through that too. They also had a house on the hill known as Z Experimental Station, or ZES. I guess this is where they would have put some of their equipment to the test, things like that as well. There was one in Cairns, Queensland. It's where I live here in Queensland. But that Cairns is around about probably more than 12 hours drive north of where I live here. Also, Fraser Commando School on Fraser Island. Again, very close to that, but it's an island off the coast of Australia. You can pretty much catch a boat to get to. And also, the fact there's also a Careening Bay camp in Garden Island, Western Australia. Also, another in Darwin. So you can see the Z Special pretty much covered the coasts of Australia all the way down to, of course, Refuge Bay in New South Wales, which is where Sydney is. As early as 1943, the Australians and the British forces were looking to attack Singapore in the chance that they could use Z Special to sabotage and destroy Japanese shipping in the region would absolutely crush the Japanese forces, and the chance to actually restock their supplies, ammunition, food, you name it, hospital stuff, whatever. There was many times where they tried to do this, but on this occasion, a British officer by the name of Captain Ivan Lyon had basically got together with an Australian civilian by the name of Bill Reynolds, and it was their idea to basically use a commando unit to go into Singapore and attach mines, limpet mines, to the sides of ships there to destroy them. Now, what's interesting about that is they even tried to do a mock version of it here in Australia for training for Z Special. And it's also one of the many Z Special adaptations, as in the taking the story and put it into TV or film, that was done in the 80s in a mini-series. I believe the name of it was Heroes, if I remember right. Used a lot of soap actors like Jason Donovan, Cameron Daddo, who were very much the it actors at the time that were popular in different daytime soaps. A lot of those soaps you can now see in the UK still to this day, in New Zealand. Again, it's like Foster's. We don't drink it, but we export it. In this case too, it was a plan to use a disguised fishing boat and also folding kayaks on that ship to go and attach those different vessels. So what's great about it is they had a plan, they practiced it, and of course later in the year they would actually devise it to the point where it was a feasible operation. So you got Operation Scorpion, which happened in 43, and they'd been experimenting at the Z Experimental Station, Cairns, Queensland, and going through different ideas on raids in and around New Guinea, using submarine, etc. But also a small group of commandos aboard would be listening through. There's some parts of that story, and particularly infiltration, which are pretty much the cornerstone of what you're seeing in, of course, the film we're about to chat about, which is interesting. Obviously, Operation Jaywick was the one where they wanted to infiltrate the heavy Japanese presence in Singapore Harbour. And, of course, using the crate with a crew of about 11 Australian and 4 British personnel to go up and do that as well. Operation Ramau was a follow-up to the success of Jaywick. In fact, the sabotage worked. And they did a further attack on shipping in and around Singapore Harbour. Again, crippling the effort to restock supplies, of course, the Japanese Imperial forces there too. There's many others like Operation Copper and others, but again, you could see the success that Zed Special was having was something that would also put a price on the heads of many of those soldiers. And of course, as we see in the film, the Japanese are definitely looking to take out some of those Australian commandos because they're going to get quite a bit of money for their heads. This is the history of course, Zed Special.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been a real busy day, you know. Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage. Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, we're in the pub, folks. Grab yourself a lager. Grab yourself an iced coffee. Grab yourself a glass of water. Whatever is going to fix the parchment in your throat, this will do it, folks. And, of course, now we're going to soothe your ears with much chatter when it comes to the one, the only Attack Force Z. All right, so let's look at the cast first up. As mentioned, we've got quite an interesting cast here. And, of course, Mel Gibson. Pretty much filmed this around about the same time as Mad Max. The film had been filming around the late 70s, about 78 or thereabout, 79. And again, the film didn't come out till a little bit later, but quite interesting that they sort of brought that up. This is a film which on Aussie television you'd find pretty much at 11 p.m. at night, almost twice a year back in the old days. Back in the mid-80s, it would often be on Saturday nights and Sunday nights when it aired. This is a film which had some of the biggest stars of the 1980s Australian cinema. The likes, of course, of Mel Gibson and Sam Neill. With that, of course, you know you're going to be getting something that is obviously quality and obviously something of the upcoming careers of these two amazing gentlemen. Also, John Waters, the Australian actor born in England, who came out and he certainly was an amazing theatre actor, but also he was a musician and he did almost a massive 20-year stretch with, of course, the children's program Play School. Play School used to be something you would watch after primary school. You'd come home at 3 p.m. and you'd watch that, and John Waters would take you through that with a lot of other actors and stuff like that. It's basically Australia's edition of course, Sesame Street, minus all the puppets. But it was a learning show, and John Waters was a regular on that. If you grew up in the 80s and 90s, no doubt you grew up with John Waters on Play School. So it had a hell of a cast, and this film was certainly one that gave you a little bit of an inkling into what Zed Special did, using, of course, their foldable kayaks, where they would go around and wreak havoc on the Japanese. And Zed Special certainly was one to the point where they had price on their heads. The Japanese certainly were doing a lot of head hunting when it came to these guys. And as you can tell in some of the history that we've talked about earlier, and even some you can find online, if you look it up, you can find that these gentlemen were certainly on the run with some of their raids that didn't go quite right, and they had to pretty much abandon plans for said missions and basically island hop their way to safety. But most got captured, and at least 10 of them were beheaded by the Japanese Imperial Army. The film was directed by Tim Burstall, who has really put out this film in such a way that it's definitely, of the time, much more grim, tough, but also within the lines of the military man on a mission. He's done it quite well. It was shot in 1979 in Taiwan and then came out 2 years later in the Cannes Film Festival in 18th of May 1981. Screenplay by Roger Marshall and produced by Lee Robinson. Top billing went to John Philip Law, then Mel Gibson, Sam Neill, Chris Hayward, John Waters,
Kuchuan Swing, and of course Sylvia Chang, and OT. Cinematography by Hong Chun Lin, and of course edited by David Stiven. So you can see this is a co-production, so a lot of the local talent, like the cinematographer, and of course some of the stars in this as well, had to join, as we've got both the Australians and of course the Taiwanese making this film. Music by Eric Jupp, and of course we've got John McCallum and his production company behind it, with of course Central Motion Picture Corporation. Out in Australia and in the local market, it was put out by Roadshow Film Distributors. Roadshow are the biggest in Australia in particular, who from the 1980s took a lot of the local and also international films and distributed Australia-wide, and obviously too into the markets in Taiwan and Southeast Asia. And I do believe it also got showing with, of course, New Zealand. New Zealand too, because you're going to think about it, Sam Neill being a New Zealander, would have been great to see that too. So, as anything, of course, it really is the start of careers for these two gentlemen. Sam Neill had also done a lot of work behind the scenes, and it was, as it says in the documentary of Attack Force Z on the Blu-ray you can get, which is something I tell you all to go and get, because it really is a great version of the film. We get to see where they talk about Sam had literally been behind the scenes in a lot of, whether it be Australian or New Zealand film, working in the production itself, not as an actor, but of course it was his good looks and of course his mannerisms and stuff like that that people said you should give acting a try and really try and see if you can get something out of it. The main plot of this film is literally the Zed Special Unit going to this island and of course rescuing what appears to be, at first, none of them know except for, of course, P.G. Kelly, the captain of it, which is, of course, Mel Gibson's character. And he knows that he's got to get a traitor to the Japanese, who is part of their political unit, who wants to ensure peace between the nations and get back to stability after World War II. One of the great things about the film, too, is opens with a little spiel about the Zed Special. And it tells you all about, one of the veterans' points of view. And, of course, it's clear, makes it out that the Australian, British and New Zealand commando units were what occupied that unit. Also the Dutch as well, as most don't know. So the film opens up in the Straits of Sembilang, and we see a submarine come to the surface. Submarine has five men come outside of it, and, of course, from there, they pull apart their foldable canoes and, of course, from there, make their ways to the shore of Sembilang. The team's led by Paul Kelly, played by Mel Gibson, who is an officer, a commando, who's totally inexperienced. He has no formal experience behind him. So this is pretty much his first go at things. The team, obviously, is landing in secret, but they have plans to meet with some of the local militia, local resistance, which we'll get into soon. As they go using their kayaks, they hide the kayaks and camouflage them and then get on their way. As they slowly get inland, Ted, played by John Waters, plays Ted Kingo King. He gets hit by some type of unseen sniper, they thought at first, but then you see that it's actually a machine gun nest. And this is the first engagement they have with the Japanese. So, amazing. This is a great scene where we see Sam Neill, in particular, deal with his downed friend who's broken his leg with the shot that's taken at him. He sits down beside a tree. Everyone says their goodbyes as they're about to head off on the mission. But it's the one experienced person that's actually going to lead the way. And this is, of course, Sam Neill's character. Sam Neill, we've always known as a very, laid-back countryman, a laid-back character in most of the films that he's in, particularly as Dr. Alan Grant in Jurassic Park. But in this one, this is a bit different. He's playing an officer who knows he's on a mission, knows he cannot leave his man behind to be tortured by the Japanese and to give up what their mission secrets are. So instead, he gives the man a cigarette, and of course, as they're sitting down having a cigarette, He then turns his weapon on him and fires. With a broken leg, the guy wasn't going anywhere. And it's look, it's a sad moment. Particularly, I would love to have seen John Waters go on and become a bit of an action guy, particularly in this film where he would have been buddied up all the way through the film with, of course, the might of Mel Gibson and Sam Neill. And who knows, John Waters might have had a different career. He certainly has been a TV star and done a number of films, but none of them have been huge successes. And it's a shame because the man is immensely talented and he's certainly a very likable guy. You know, he really knows how to keep the audience's attention. And that's what I think is really interesting in this film. When he's playing Kingo, you know, he's just one of the lads who's, you know, out there to do a job. Sad but true, and this, of course, is the life of somebody behind enemy lines that is out to sabotage the enemy's chances of success. So on the men move, we've got, of course, Mel Gibson and, of course, Sam Neill. But we also have Chris Haywood, who's a very much a regular of Australian film, television, and many other things. Chris Haywood, there's been so many films over the years that it kind of feel like, you know, he just turns up when you least expect it. He's an immensely talented actor himself and certainly very, very much still a character out there today. You can see him in a lot of even documentaries now. Chris Haywood was in the documentary for Attack Force Z and gave all the information that he needed to as well. So from here, we see them obviously on their way to look for a downed plane that's being crashed into the mountains of Sembilang, where they will no doubt find their quarry that they need to get. As they near their way through, they go and find a village. In this village, they are able to find some people that will know how to get through. As they near the village, a farmer lets them know where to go and how to find people that can help them. And it's our new companion here, of course, the American actor John Philip Law, who then shoots the man to ensure their secrecy. As they go to the destination, they find a Japanese Imperial Army squad is at the house, and they leave and enter the house and find the local leader of the resistance, a man by the name of Lin. He's got a daughter by the name of Qian Hua and her family of younger brothers and sisters. So with a guide to lead them through, they're basically going to be taken around to find where this area is. Lin has a small group that are resistance fighters in their attempt to take on the Japanese. As they go through, character Jun Veitch, who John Philip Law plays, is separated from the rest. He's the interpreter in the group, the one that has full skills in the Chinese languages of both Mandarin and, I believe, Cantonese in this. And, of course, he is there to work with Qian Hua and hired from the Japanese army who are around at the time. He finds a way to hide under a little cage of pigs in the farm where they've got a little foothill. And from there, he keeps quiet while, of course, the Japanese come in a number of times and harass Lin's family. Further up in the island, Kelly and, of course, Lin and the rest of the team watch as they see sight of the plane, but the locals have destroyed it. Using explosives found in the plane, they blow up the plane itself. And then from here, Lin's actually not giving them the answers that they want. And they go around trying to find what has happened by chatting to the rest of the people in the village. And from there, they head to the plane itself, where Lin seems to still be not telling everybody what's happening. Kelly finally manages to get Lin to let him know what's happening, what's actually found in the plane itself, and of course finds about the two survivors. And from here, they take him back to the house, and from there, along with the resistance fighters, they decide to make a stand against the Japanese and get the Japanese government official Imaguchi out of the area. Of course, he knows secrets that can put an end to the war. From here, Kelly and the team must do what they can to get the man out to safety. And of course, it's going to cost more than they expect. And of course, it's going to cost the lives of many people. So let's go through quickly a roundup of the cast. As mentioned earlier, John Philip Law plays Lieutenant J.A. Veitch, or Jun Veitch. is the interpreter, Dutchman, in it. And of course, we have Mel Gibson as Captain PG Kelly. We have Sam Neill as Sergeant DJ Danny Costello. Chris Hayward as Able Seaman AD Sparrow Bird. John Waters as Sub Lieutenant Ted Kingo King. We have Ku Chun as rice farmer that gets killed in the film. Local actor in Taiwan. Sylvia Chang as Xian Hua, the love interest to Zhang Veach, and of course, daughter of Lin. We got O.T. as Shaw Hu. We've also got, of course, Ku Chuan Sing as Lin Li Chen Lang. Of course, great in it. He's very stoic, an amazing presence in the film as well. And he's got some really good skills when it comes to sort of the martial arts and stuff like that. This is a story that's based off Operation Opossum, where a team was meant to go and rescue the local sultan of the Japanese island of Ternate near Borneo. And of course, the Zed Special were all through the Borneo sector, particularly teaching a lot of the locals how to do commando raids and tactics. The original title was The Zed Men, and it was to be directed by, of course, Patriot Games and Clear and Presentation director Philip Noyce. Of course, Philip Noyce, also known for Blind Fury. The production was going ahead in Taiwan for more than 6 weeks, and Noyce had obviously worked on the story with another writer by the name of Michael Cove. And then he had a big clash with the producers, and for a number of the other things that were going on, things like casting and stuff like that, and it all came to a head. Then Tim Burstall came on the scene in November 1979 and finished the film. It was delayed by weather and, of course, script writing and stuff like that. There was another, obviously, character added, John Waters, who would come in. And basically, one of the great things about that character is, as small as the role is, it puts a threat of just how, you know, hard this mission is, particularly when it comes to the fact that they can be taken out by the Japanese. The film was based on the night The Zed Men Landed, which is written by Gene James and under his pseudonym of the military books, Owen Gibson. It came out in the 1960s, and it was one that the producers had taken on. So, how did this film fare? Well, I can tell you from me, it's a nice, quick, fun film, which, you know, shows what war's about. It shows sacrifice that it, you know, really puts out to, you know, I think, you know, really sets a bit of a scene. It's not the greatest film in the world. It's actually known to be a pretty terrible film by most reviewers, but in there lies a silver lining of it being a bit of a gem as well. Mel Gibson's quoted as saying, the film's pretty woeful. It's so bad it's funny. And it's kind of falls in there. It's not a great film, but it's also one that's kind of heading towards that Flash Gordon area, that it's so terrible that it's also good. And I think that's where it sort of falls in there too. It wasn't a huge market for it. It didn't make a lot of money, but it also was a bit of a stepping stone. And it certainly was something for the likes of Mel Gibson and Sam Neill to, you know, really hone their skills a little bit and have some fun with making an action picture in some ways. We certainly haven't seen Sam Neill like this, as close as he's got to being like James Bond almost. And I'm sure you'd agree too. Now, of course, what is more important is, what does it go on our scale here? And of course, The Lethal Mullet. Well, I can tell you folks, this film hits a 2.5 out of 5 on, of course, the one, the only scale that we do here, of course. The Hallenbach scale, folks, that's right. So, look, it's a film that's worth watching, particularly this new version. I think you definitely check it out for the early performances. And it's interesting watching John Philip Law kind of be the co-lead of this as well. Likeable enough actor, although, as said in the documentary, all he's worried about in the film is his hair most of the time. Hair's got to be perfect for a soldier, I guess, in this as well. And, of course, the local talent in Taiwan, particularly you know, with the character of Xian Hua, you know, she shows so much heroism in as well, and this is just does a fantastic job, I think. So go and check out the film, and of course, check out the early work here of some of the greatest Australian actors. I think you'll enjoy it.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer, and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. Endzone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.